When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Monica here with you, 877-337-6666. In your heartache. Waiting on some beautiful boy to score a goal.
We're waiting for a beautiful boy to score a goal. That's what we need. Oh, here he comes. I hope so. 877-337-6666. The Killers are giving me some confidence. And I do have confidence. I do not think we will see the Rangers play again like that on Friday night. I do not think this series is over. I do not think the Rangers can't beat this team. I'm not going to read too much into game one. We did not think they were going to wipe the floor with Carolina after winning game one. I do not expect to get the doors blown off them after losing game one. This Ranger team is too good. They've been too resilient. They've come back off of bad performances too often. I believe in them too much. I believe in Igor too much to have another bad game. And yes, he had a bad game. I don't think that's something, you know, odd to say or out of character or not true. He had a bad game. It wasn't the number one reason they lost. Offensively, they got absolutely nothing done. But he's got to be better, too. 877-337-6666. Bob in Florida. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Thank you for letting me call.
Of course.
First of all, I talked to you last week about the Rempe situation. I have no problem with Sutter playing. The problem is he won't even hit anybody because of the situation he's in. And not only that, he's not even going to be able to take a check. I think they should sit Kako. Kako has been doing nothing in the series. I think they should sit him for them. Rempe should play hustling. I think he will get the Rangers even going even more. I went to game six in North Carolina. Okay. Everybody thought the Rangers were done. Okay. They came back. They won. They all think the Rangers are done already after this first game. I hear no hardly any Rangers tonight calls. When we won that game six, the phones were ringing like crazy. I don't hear nobody calling. And because they lost tonight, Igor had a bad game. Hey, that man deserves a bad game once in a while. Okay, how many bad games have you seen him have in his career? Okay, yeah, he let the goal in. Okay, it's over with. Okay, it's time to play. Okay, but my thing is, I think we got to sit. Rempe has to play every game.
Why?
I don't care. If we're not scoring without him. Okay, so what's the difference if he's playing? And at least he'll go to the front of the net. He'll go in the corners and get the puck. He'll hit you in the corner. Okay, we had none of that. If he does that, he plays, the Rangers will follow that. And that's why Rempe, I'm not saying Rempe's going to fight, but Rempe in the lineup will get the Rangers' asses going. That's how I feel. Somebody else has to sit, whether it's Kapo. I hate to see Cooley sit. I like his aggressiveness, but I wouldn't want Cooley to sit. But someone else has to. Philip Seidel shouldn't be playing anymore. Maybe next year. Give the guy, just let the guy not even play anymore.
What?
He's going to get hit, and it's going to be bad when he gets hit. And he can't give a hit because if he does, he's going to get hurt. So that's a different argument,
I suppose. Whether or not he helps the team, or whether or not you're concerned for his safety, and I don't disagree with you on the safety. I mean, he's being cleared by doctors. I don't know how to. You know, distinguish between what he should be doing and what the doctors say he should be doing. If he's allowed to play, he plays.
Look at that game he played, and then he was out the next game because he got sick. I'm going to game three and four.
Okay.
In Florida.
Okay.
I'm a big Rangers fan. I lived in New York. I moved to Florida. Now
right.
I'm going. I went, like I said, I went to the North Carolina game. Now
right.
I'm going to the two Florida games
sure.
here. But I'm not saying Seidel can't help us. But my thing is. If he gets hit, I just got to see the man play out for next year. Not only for the safety, but he's not giving 100% out there. He can't. He's afraid. He's afraid that something's going to happen to him.
I don't know. I mean, in the one game, nobody did anything offensively in this game, so it was hard to judge how he played. Nothing jumped out at me that he was. I thought he brought some speed in the game he played against Carolina, and almost had an unbelievable play that led to a scoring chance. Rempe. If you listen to Sean Avery, and especially if the Garden crowd is going to be an issue and you want to get the crowd going, I agree Rempe will do that. The crowd loves him. You know, we love this old-time hockey and him being, you know, young and at the size he's at and the physical nature in which he plays the game, the crowd gets into him. So if you're looking for a boost for the crowd, okay, a big hit could get the crowd going. Maybe it gets the team going, I suppose, but here's the problem. And this doesn't, I can't change this, you can't change this. The coach does not trust him. Plain and simple. We could say that's a fault of the coach. If you want to, you can try and tell me that. He's not going to play in the big moments. He played 4 minutes one game. He doesn't trust him not to take a bad penalty. He's got a bit of a reputation. The other team will go after him. You can't take penalties in this series, and he doesn't provide enough. And the coach does not play him. I don't know how else to say it. The coach does not trust him. You can't get a new coach. And you can't convince the coach he has to trust him. He doesn't trust him. That's just an inert belief that has gone too far here to suddenly change. Now, if they're devastated by injuries or something, then you have to play him and you have to trust him. That'll be different. But right now, he trusts other players more than he trusts Rempe. And you can't take bad penalties. And I don't think, like, you're just saying, oh, Capo hasn't done anything. You know, Rempe will, you know, hit on the boards and everything. I mean, I guess I'm not opposed to it if they're flat again and maybe they need just a change and you do it for change's sake. And yeah, he'll get the crowd going. In Florida, it won't matter. So maybe they play him in game two. Maybe if they come back down 3-1, he'll have to play him in game five. But I don't think that's something that I don't think he provides something they desperately need. I think they need more scoring chances. He's not going to do that for you. And the coach doesn't trust him. That's the end all be all. I don't need to put a guy in a lineup that's not going to play because the coach doesn't trust him to not take a bad penalty or to make a mistake. That's it. I mean, that's you had. If the coach felt, if it was just a matter of, well, this guy's finally healthy. If Rempe was playing a lot, the coach trusted him. He brings a different dynamic to the team, and it's just, well, now Filippito's healthy. You know, he's been our guy. We expect more from him, and he does provide a little bit more offense. Let's go with Heedle. I think the argument to go back to Rempe makes more sense. We saw when Rempe was there was no other option but Rempe. He still didn't play. He didn't hit the ice. The coach doesn't trust him. I don't need someone on the team who the coach won't play. I don't need to be down a man. And you can't ask the coach to suddenly change his belief on something. And Laviolette's done an incredible job. And we are going to find out, like, here's the bottom line. Is this team good enough to win a Stanley Cup? Or is it just what everybody said about it? Is it what all the haters and all the prognosticators and all, I've seen a bunch of different tough hockey players who tell you the Rangers are soft and the Rangers don't have it come postseason time and this and that. Are all the haters right about this team, or are the New York Rangers good enough to go win a Stanley Cup? We're going to find out on Friday. We are going to find out a lot about this team. We're going to find out about this coach. Now, yes, he's already won a Stanley Cup. It's 20 years ago. And since then, he's had a lot of the, you know, not necessarily that every team has had the same mentality or like he's been able to adapt to his players and play different styles. But here's the point. He's taken a bunch of teams, the record, the most teams to the playoffs. He's won one Stanley Cup, and it was 20 years ago. We're going to find out a lot about this coach and the decision-making he makes and the adjustment he makes. We're going to find out a lot about the stars on this team. We're going to find out about Panarin. We're going to find out about Zibanejad. We're going to, I think we know about Kreider, but he's going to have to step up as well. And we're going to find out about Igor. Because Igor right now, as much as some callers here don't want to make it about Igor, they want to make it about the scoring. They want to make it about the sloppy play. They want to make it about the limited shots. They want to make it about the limited offense 5-on-5, and that's all fair. But we are going to find out about Igor Shesterkin because he is going up against a goalie that's just as good as he is, who's had an unbelievable playoff record between last year and this year, who's playing at the top of his game, who's exuding confidence, who the team believes in and, you know, exudes confidence when he makes big plays and big saves. He is going up against a counterpart that's every bit as good as he is. And if the Rangers are going to win, he's probably going to need to be better than Bobrovsky. We are going to find out about the stars of this team. We are going to find out about the core of this team. We're going to find out about the coach. Answers will be provided. Are they going to be the ones that we are looking for as Ranger fans? That's the question. Because you know what? Carolina was tough. And they played two overtime games in games 2 and 3. And if either of those games went the other way, the Rangers were able to get out in front. They won game one. They played, and I'm not saying it's not because they played great. They played great. They played winning hockey. I don't believe the narrative that they were outplayed in some of those games. I don't. But they were able to get out front. Right, they sweep Washington, they're riding high, they get game one, they get game two in overtime, they get game three, and then it started to fade, but they were able, in a third period, to win a game. They've never had to come from behind. They haven't had to really show up to a game knowing they better freaking win this one. I guess game six on the road, and up until the final moments of the third period, they didn't respond well. This is gut check time. This is who are you time. And we're going to find out. And if they're not good enough, they're not good enough. If Florida's better, then Florida's better. But these are the moments we live for. This is a series. And you either get it done or you don't. The President's Trophy means nothing. The points mean nothing. It's how tough are you and how can you adjust your game to the positives of your opponent? How do you change the idea that you only got the 23 shots? How do you change the idea that they were able to bog down your offense? How do you figure out how to get more scoring chances? How do you get more guys in front of the net? How do you make it harder on Bobrovsky? We're going to find out about this Ranger team. Mike in Palm Coast. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how are you doing? I got to disagree with you.
Okay.
You know, I watched the whole game. The Rangers were banged around the whole game. They're a big, strong team, Florida. And the intermission, the first intermission, the great Messier, number one point, he said, how are they going to change this? They got to play Remke. That's what he said. I don't know if you watched it or not, but that was his main point of the whole first intermission.
Mm-hmm.
Subban rolled his eyes. Any other guy rolled his eyes. And he, Messier stood strong on it. He says, it's obvious. The Rangers are flat. They're getting banged around. They must do it. They got to put them in there. And I'm sure that I don't think the coach has that he's not going to play him or anything like that. It's just not Tibbs.
It's not that he's in the doghouse necessarily. He just doesn't trust him in the big moments. And here's what I'll say. And explain it to me. And I'm not saying Messier clearly knows more hockey than I do. I'm not an idiot. But here's my point. But Subban knows more hockey than I do too. And apparently he doesn't agree. Here's my point though. Explain to me how the few minutes. And by the way, he's played 4 minutes in a game. Like, explain to me how Rempe being out there changes the entire dynamic of how the Rangers are going to get hit and beat up. How does Rempe change everything?
Well, just like the Rangers. I can't give you a specific player. I would say all the players, were intimidated by the bullying of the Florida Panthers tonight.
I didn't.
The hits that they were killing them with. They were killing them with hits. Oh, I don't know if you watched it or not. They were
No, I didn't. I missed the game. What happened?
Okay. Well, there you go. They were killing them with checks. Unbelievable. Killing them. Now, you put Remke in there, I think the Florida Panthers would be a little bit aware of getting their heads taken off.
I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that at all. I'm sorry, I just don't. You're telling me one guy playing, the Panthers are going to stop doing what they believe is in their best interest to win a playoff game over the course of 82 games, maybe on a given night where they're making business decisions. But you're telling me that this tough Florida Panther team that is better than the Rangers, everyone's telling me, is a better team than the Rangers, that is tougher than the Rangers, that knows how to win playoff games, are going to change their entire strategy and no longer hit the Rangers and no longer forecheck and no longer be aggressive. Because the imposing threat of Rempe is out there. Suddenly they're going to go, ooh, let's not play as rough because we can't handle if Matt Rempe comes and hits us. In the 4 minutes he plays in the game, they're going to stop doing what they do? They're going to be looking over their shoulder for the big bet. He's that much of an imposing threat. He's King Kong. He's Godzilla. He's gonna make the Florida Panthers question everything they do and how they do it. Okay. I don't see it. I just don't. They're going to stop hitting him because they're going to be looking over their shoulder. Now, if you need it, can you make the argument the Rangers need to play more of that game and he helps? All right. I think the best argument about Rempe is he gets the crowd going. I think that's the best argument. The best argument is he might provide a spark on some level. That's the best argument. The argument that the Panthers are killing them with hits and that that will change by putting Matt Rempe out there, I think is complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. That an entire dynamic is going to change by one player on a hockey game when they play seconds at a time. I'm watching the game. They're like, oh, it's at the end of those players have been on the ice for 50 seconds. They're exhausted. They're 50 seconds at a time, you're exhausted. Rempe's going to be out there for seconds at a time, and he's going to change everything about the way Florida decides to play this game. The imposing threat of Matt Rempe will change it all. I don't agree. If they were taking cheap shots, if their goal and the way they played this game was to be aggressive and try and take out Panarin, and they're taking cheap shots and runs at him every time they get a chance, and there are elbows flying, and there are cheap shots, and it's obvious they are out to get Panarin, they are out to get Zibanejad, they are out to get whomever, then okay, you need Rempe out there to handle business every once in a while. I suppose that's true. But just, there's a physical nature to the Florida game, and Rempe needs to remedy it? I don't buy it. I don't. And I appreciate what Messier said. I do. And the more I feel about the spark, if you feel they need a spark, if the coach is like, man, we were flat the last time we were at the Garden, we were losing a game six, and if it wasn't for some late game heroics, we were playing a game seven, and who knows what happens, and now we came out flat here, I just need a spark. And he's a guy who, since he came up, has provided a bit of a spark. If that's the thought process, I understand it. The coach is going to have to change his opinion on how he feels about Matt Rempe and how often he puts him out there and how much confidence he shows in him. But that argument at least makes sense to me. The argument that they're getting killed with hits and Rempe's going to go change that, or that they're going to be, as the last caller said, looking over their shoulders, for what? I mean, they're going to change what they... This is the playoffs, man. This isn't a Wednesday night in February where they're like, man, I don't need this crap. Let's just go about our season. They're trying to win the Stanley Cup. They're doing what they think is best to get past the Rangers. They are not going to change what they do because of the imposing threat of Matt Rempe. It's just not true. I find it impossible to believe. They will still provide a physical nature. They will still hit guys. They will still forecheck. They will still do what they do. They're not going to change their plan and go, all right, guys, here's the plan. We're going to be physical. We're going to be super aggressive. We're going to hit everybody we can. We're going to take it to the Rangers. We're going to be as aggressive and physical and hitting. Hitting is the name of the game, guys. Hitting is the name of the game. Coach, yeah, they're going to play Rempe. All right, forget the hitting strategy. What we're going to do is we're going to play complete. I mean, is that what we think? I don't get it. I want as many scorers out there as possible. I want as many offensive creators as possible. Other players can go to the net. They don't need, you know, Rempe to go out there and go to the net. Other guys, change your strategy. Get to the net. Enforce it. Talk about it. Prepare for it. Go over it and over it and over it and change your strategy and get to in front of the net. Now, I know he's a big body and provides more, you know, vision problems for Bobrovsky, but I mean, all right, I'm open to it. But please don't tell me that we're going to scare the Florida Panthers into not playing their game because Matt Rempe is out there. You're going to help the physical nature of your own team? Fine. Okay. How much? How often? I think it's completely overblown.
Your official station to talk New York Rangers.
The Rangers win and advance to the Final Four.
The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right. Ba-da-ba. When I come around. Off the great album, Dookie.
I heard you crying loud.
At least that's what Emmanuel Bavari thinks.
30-year anniversary, I think, passed like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. 30th anniversary. I was speaking about time flying and everything. I know this is out of nowhere, but it just made me think of it. I saw one of those videos on Instagram, but they, for whatever reason, this one hit with the numbers and how things are, and they. It was like a spoof. It was just like a thing, and it said gaming in your 30s and 40s. And he was at a store buying video games, in his 40s, or whatever. And he buys Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which I remember playing a ton. I don't know if you remember that game. Grand Theft Auto Vice City was like the huge video game in the early 2000s, and it had this 80s theme. Big, heavy 80s theme. And every time he got into a car, they were playing 80s music. And it was kind of a little bit like, just very heavily 80s themed. And they were talking about it. And the guy was like, and he said a bunch of stuff. But one of the things he said was, do you know that now the game came out in 2002. And the game's setting was in 1986. So the gap between today and when the game came out, which was in 2002, I was 21, 22 years old. No, I wasn't. I was younger than that. Doesn't matter. Came out in 2002. That we are further away from that than the game was away from the 1986 setting. 86 to 2002 was only 16 years. It's been 22 years since the game came out. And it felt like, oh my God, it was 1986. How retro is this? Oh my God, the 80s were forever ago. They're closer to the game than the game is to now. If you were having the same gap, if you were to make a Grand Theft Auto now and go back as far as 1986 from 2002, you'd have to go back to 2008. 2008, that's how far 1986 was back then. With such old movies like The Dark Knight. I mean, come on.
And that's... almost 100% sure that's the year Grand Theft Auto 4 came out.
Yeah,
the one that's set in New York.
Right, yes, maybe. But just think of like that. 1986 to when that game came out is the same time from now, between now and The Dark Knight. That movie just came out. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy.
Grand Theft Auto 6 comes out in a couple years. You getting it for your kids?
No, probably not. Although I am video game shopping now. I was also at Dick's looking for a basketball hoop. Got to get a new basketball hoop for their birthdays. Both of their birthdays are within a couple weeks of each other. My wife's a teacher, and we have excellent timing. We plan. I mean, she wanted it right at the end of the summer, take a couple, the last few weeks of the school year off, and then have her pregnancy through the summer and not have to miss a bunch of time of work. Boom. I gets it done.
Not during Yankee season, so you're free?
Well, yeah. The conception? Yes, I guess that's true. But yeah, so there.
Giants have been terrible. You know, you got nothing going on.
I had nothing going on in February. But, or whenever, not February, earlier than that, November. But yes, end of May, early June. So both, we do both of their birthdays together. So it looks like maybe a basketball hoop. I'm looking for video games. But Grand Theft Auto will not be in it. But unbelievable. When I first played Grand Theft Auto, it felt like the 80s were a million years ago. They're playing the songs from Scarface in the car. You know it if you ever played Vice City. The same distance would be between now and 2008. That just makes me nuts. I know I sound like an old man. I sound like the old men we always, like, you know, rolled our eyes at. Like, yeah, okay, pal. Get the hell out of here. We're playing handball. Leave us alone. But now I'm one of them. 2008. 2008 was just the other day. In fact, only a year later, the Yankees won the World Series for the last time. But hey, they beat the very talented, unbelievable, elite Seattle Mariners last night. Oh, thank the Lord they were able to beat a good team. Because I was really getting nervous. I mean, I know they have the best record in the American League, right? I know. I know that now they have the most runs scored in the American League. They've given up the least amount. They've given up the least amount of runs in the American League. Their starting rotation is on a run that they haven't seen since 1968. The starting rotation has had an ERA around 1 2 times through the rotation. But none of that matters, because they blew a game and lost a game to Seattle, and they lost the series to Baltimore, who, by the way, just got swept by St. Louis. So now how do we think about them? And they, earlier in the season, lost the series 2 out of 3 to Oakland. Oh, man. I mean, geez, I guess Baltimore stinks. I don't know what to think. The overreaction to a baseball season is nuts. And this narrative that the Yankees are somehow have a real struggle against good teams is just so dumb. And we pick and choose, and that's what bothers me the most. We pick and choose what good teams are, because I'll tell you right now. I will tell you right now. If the Yankees steamrolled Seattle, if the Yankees finished off that game and Clay Holmes didn't give up 4 runs in the 9th, and then the Yankees somehow won the second game, the narrative would be, if there even was one around the series, it would be, oh, there's the Yankees beating up on average teams again. But because they won that game and Clay Holmes gave up 4 runs miraculously, you know, for Seattle, miraculous. For me, it was terrible. But because that happened, and because they lost the first 2 games of the series in a 4-game set that they haven't even lost the series yet, but because those 2 games happened, suddenly Seattle is a really good team and plays into the narrative that the Yankees can't beat really good teams. Although Cleveland, who just had their way with the Mets in every which way, who has the second best record in the American League, who on average, game, you know, per game, has scored the most runs per game in the American League because they played one less game than the Yankees, who has a, you know, a 30-plus wins and having a great year, the Yankees go on the road and beat them 2 out of 3. Well, listen, Cleveland is a joke, and everyone inside the Central Division is a joke. It's just we say what we want to say. We believe what we want to believe. If the Yankees beat them, they're not good teams. If the Yankees lose to them, they're good teams and elite teams, and shows you that the Yankees can't beat good teams. It's ridiculous. The Yankees, and if you watch last night, beat up on Seattle. You get a home run from Judge to start the game. You get two home runs from Juan Soto. Nestor Cortez gives you another, very solid, I was about to say incredible, no run scored over five innings. He was kind of shaky, but at home he's got an ERA of 1.12 where the players dwell, and that's where Nestor Cortez is. And the biggest problem the Yankees have is how they're going to fit Gerrit Cole back into the rotation that's pitching like the best rotation in all of baseball. So don't get confused. Don't believe what you hear. The New York Yankees are the best team in the American League. That's a fact, Jack. And Verdugo, you want to talk about the difference between this year, this team, and previous teams, even going back to 2019? And other years where they had monster years and won 100-plus games and lost in ALCSs, 22, where they won 99 games, had a bad second half, an incredible first half, but won 99 games, won a division, got to an ALCS and got swept. You know what the difference is between that team and this team? You want to look at it plain bluntly, other than just Juan Soto, which is good enough, but Verdugo. The difference in what they are throwing out in left field now compared to what they were playing in left field back then, even while winning, is night and day. They were playing Hicks. They were playing infielders. Oswaldo Cabrera was your left fielder to start playoff games. They have an excellent defender in Verdugo and a guy who they put cleanup and change the lineup, hits a two-run home run after they give up a three-run home run and make it a close game in the eighth. He comes back and finishes it off, the night capper, with a two-run shot. And he has been everything you could have asked and more. And that is the main difference. Left field has been a barren wasteland, and now it is filled by not a great player, maybe not even an all-star type player, but a solid player and a good player. And a guy who has been an excellent defensive player who puts the ball in play. He hits it all over the field, still has pop for a home run, especially in the short porch of Yankee Stadium. He's been great. The starting rotation's been great, and besides a blip on the radar the other night for Clay Holmes, they've got a closer who hardly gives up runs, a bullpen that's been one of the best in the American League, and they are as good as anyone. And don't buy into, well, they've struggled here in this series, or they lost three out of four, against Baltimore, so there's some underlying problem. It's absolute nonsense. One series in the middle, it's about how you play overall. Just like the Mets, it's not about getting swept by Cleveland. It's about the fact that they're terrible at the moment and can't do anything right. They can't play defense. They can't run the bases. They can't hit. When they do hit, they can't pitch. Hauser stinks. The bullpen is starting to show cracks, including Diaz already being taken out of the closer role. Your best players are having terrible seasons, and you just look like a bad baseball team. That's more important than whether or not they got swept, lost the series. It's how they're playing. And the New York Yankees are playing like one of the best teams in baseball. And that silly narrative about losing to good teams is just ridiculous. Because if they beat Seattle, they would be a walkover. They'd be a pushover who hasn't beaten the Yankees since 1995. Even when they win 116 games, they can't beat the Yankees. They've lost to the Yankees in every postseason, 2001. They never beat the Yankees. They've been in the playoffs, one time since 2001. Oh, so you beat the Mariners. Oh, big deal. That's what people would say if they beat the Mariners. But because the Mariners beat the Yankees, you see, they can't beat the good teams. Because that's what's being said about beating Cleveland and beating Minnesota. Minnesota came into a Yankee series winning 17 out of 20. And while I'm not telling you Minnesota is a world beater or a great team, they were hot. They were scoring tons of runs. They won 17 of 20, including a 12-in-a-row stretch. And the Yankees beat the crap out of them. And Cleveland is the second-best team in the American League right now. And despite not being uber-talented, they do everything right. The lineup has scored a ton of runs. And taking care of two out of three of them means absolutely nothing because, you know, they've beaten Cleveland in the playoffs the last couple of years, times they've faced them. And they play in the lousy Central. Have you looked at the West? I'm sorry, the Seattle winning that division, leading that division, being a handful of games over 500 makes Seattle some sort of world beater. The Houston Astros have completely fallen off. The Angels don't have Mike Trout and we're terrible with them. The Oakland A's play in that division. And the Rangers are dealing with injuries and haven't gotten off to a good start. But somehow, because they're leading the Western division, it means a hell of a lot more. They have the worst batting average of any team that they would be. If they made the playoffs today, they would have the worst batting average of any team in the American League that's made the playoffs in the last 25 years. But no, they're elite because they won two games. Well, that we're talking about. And since we're at it, let's talk about the owner. The owners have been major topics around here lately, and I admit, I'll be the first to say I've gotten flack for defending the comments on social media, on Twitter and X. I'm not telling you, I'm not defending Hal Steinbrenner's comments. And let me just say this. I agree that Hal Steinbrenner should not have said this. And if you haven't heard the quotes or seen the story, Hal Steinbrenner referenced saying the current state of the Yankee payroll, thank you. Sometimes the words just don't come out. The current state of the Yankee payroll is not feasible long-term for the New York Yankees. That is, I mean, it's amazing where we go and how quickly we turn. Two days ago, the owner and Brian Cashman both talk about the importance of re-signing Juan Soto and extending him, and that we will have talks about trying to extend him sometime this season. It's important to us. We're going to try and do it. And that leads to rampant speculation that he's going to sign an extension. Boris didn't dismiss it. Soto said, hey, I'm open to conversation. So therefore, Yankees are going to sign Juan Soto. Yesterday, comments are shown that where the owner says, well, look, having a $300-plus million payroll, despite it not being a salary cap sport, the penalties for having this kind of money is just not feasible long term. And now suddenly, Juan Soto will never be a Yankee. That's clear indication that there is no interest and that they don't have the money and don't want to spend the money. And next year is going to look dramatically different because the owner is a cheap bastard who only cares about making money and beer and chicken buckets and all the other cliches that get thrown at you every time this argument comes up. So let me just say this. One, and first of all, everything's going great. And I disagree with the Seattle comments from Sean Marash in the afternoon show, but he did say this, and he's 100% right. Why the hell? I know you were asking a direct question, I suppose. Why on earth, with everything going great for the New York Yankees, they're the best team in the American League, everything's going great, everyone loves Juan Soto and Judge, the pitching has been remarkable. I mean, you have to look very, very hard to find a major issue, or really any issue whatsoever, right now at the New York Yankees. So why on earth would you throw this out into the atmosphere at this current moment? Just, we all know you kind of feel this way. Just shut up about it. Why would you create an issue inside this fan base that is so fickle that losing two games to Seattle changes the feeling around the fan base after they haven't lost two consecutive games in a month? It's just dumb. Know your fan base. You knew your fan base. That's why you had the comments after the season. That's why you traded for Juan Soto. You know the fan base is pissed. They haven't won a World Series since 2009. We're all pissed. You had a miserable season last year. We're all pissed. Don't throw things out there like this to give red meat to the haters and the doubters and your personal haters. Just don't say these things. Now, once we get past the idea it was a stupid comment, let's just say this. I've read the story. I didn't hear the comments. I don't know if they're sound. But the idea that saying this means he won't sign Juan Soto, or that next year's payroll won't look similar to this year's payroll, is not what I took from it. Nowhere, unless I miss something, which, by the way, not impossible, I'm half asleep half the time. He did not say this has to change next year. He's saying moving forward and the way we operate, which is very similar to what he's been saying for years, is that we cannot operate at this payroll for an extended period of time or moving forward. We are not going to live without ever coming back from. We are not going to spend forever in this category of being over the luxury tax and paying the rest of baseball to try and beat us. But he went out there and put them over the luxury tax because he recognized where they are, where the fan base is, and that they need to win. And moving forward, yes, next year they might still have to be in this. As long as the Stanton contract and the DJ LeMahieu contract are still on the books, there's still a likelihood on some level for the next year or two that they will be in this spot. But moving forward, the plan is not to consistently have a payroll like this forever. You don't have to like that. I don't like that. They're certainly rich enough where the idea that it's not feasible is probably a poor choice of words. Not ideal would be better. Not feasible, considering the amount of money you're worth, seems pretty stupid and inaccurate and something I don't want to hear from my owners, the New York Yankees, and we can get into ticket prices and money for food and this and that. But ultimately, not feasible is probably not accurate. But we know they don't want to operate in this way. And here's my point. You don't have to. The Arizona Diamondbacks have been to a World Series more recently than the New York Yankees. You do not have to operate in the highest of echelons of your payroll to win. The Mets tried it. They're breaking it down. I know we're slightly getting on ownership, but we're not killing. You expect them to spend money next year, I know. As he breaks it down, we all expect Juan Soto and everybody else. You know, every free agent pitcher, Burns is going to be there. Bueller's going to be there. Soto's going to be there. He's going to spend all this money, fine, great. He's getting away from the high-priced team that lost last year. Big money in today's game doesn't guarantee victory. And there is a path. And this was my point on Twitter. There is a path to still sign Juan Soto because I know once the comments are made, that's the jump automatically. Well, forget Juan Soto. No. There is a path to sign Juan Soto. There is a path to still have a lower payroll than this and have the stars. And how you do it is what they're trying to do now by developing their young talent. How do you have Soto on a team paying what you have to pay him? How do you have Judge, Soto, Cole on a team while keeping your payroll at limits? By having the middle of your defense young, free, young and cheap. Having Wells as your starting catcher. Having Volpe as your starting shortstop. Having possibly, I know we haven't seen him in forever, Peraza instead of Torres as your starting second baseman. And having Jason Dominguez as your starting center fielder. And having Spencer Jones as your starting left fielder. That's what they tried to do with the Baby Bombers. That's what they're going to try and do now. And that's how you manage to have stars while keeping your payroll at a limit that the Yankees can be comfortable with. Now, that might not, if they're all great, like the 90s, it leads to success. If they're bad, like the Baby Bombers, it won't. But ultimately, it's probably the best way to build your team than paying for every top free agent at every position. That's what the Yankees are trying to do. And now it is difficult while guys like Stanton making big money are on the team, while guys who are making $19, $20 million who aren't playing that well or injured in the case of DJ LeMahieu are on the team. But Rizzo is going to be gone. Verdugo, as much as I just sang his praises, is probably going to be gone. Gleyber Torres is not going to get a contract. He is going to be gone. That is all money coming off the books that they intend to replace with cheaper options, namely young farmhands. That's how they're going to do this. You can have Judge, Soto, Cole, maybe one other guy. Then you have to have cheaper options and younger players. That's it. And listening to him or reading his comments, I don't get that it means next year by hook or by crook, we're under the luxury tax. He's just saying for the long-term future of the New York Yankees, we do not plan on operating above the threshold at this level on a year-in and year-out basis. It might be necessary for the... Now, he doesn't say this. This is me just saying. It might be necessary for that to be the case for a year or two. I don't think he put that out of the realm of possibility. He did it this year because he knows he needed it. He might have to do it next year because he knows he needs it. But moving forward, the plan is not going to be sign this guy, sign that guy, sign this guy. We're going to fill up the... Oh, Rizzo can't play? Who's our who's the most expensive first baseman? Oh, DJ LeMahieu's on out? Who's our most expensive third baseman? Like, that's not how they're going to operate. But the Juan Sotos, who's already in this building, who's a generational star, who's going to make money for them by being here, who's a Hall of Famer, that guy they can keep. Judge, they can keep. Cole, they can keep. You might even have to lose Clay Holmes and not pay a closer big-time money, especially the way you've been able to handle your bullpen with no-name guys and turn the next Clay Holmes into your closer. You might have to operate your bullpen that way. That is what they're going to do. And if it works, they'll be the better for it. If it doesn't, we'll all complain about the lack of money they're willing to spend. That's what's going to happen with the New York Yankees. I don't have to like it. You don't have to like it. But the idea they'll never pay Soto or the big stars will never be here, totally disagree. I was arguing with a guy on Twitter who says, if you're comfortable with your owner never paying for the big stars, and I'm like, excuse me, is the best pitcher in baseball and the best hitter in baseball on the New York Yankees? I believe that they are. The stars will always be here. They will have to go lesser at other places. Now, we'll see what it means to him to win another championship. And will they aggressively chase it for another year or two or three and be willing to spend money if they don't win one this year or next year? How long will they chase the championship they need because they haven't won one since 2009? Because I do believe he wants to win a championship and he understands there are a time limit on how long they can go without, I would think. But at some point, especially when you look at the landscape of baseball and who is winning championships, because I'm sorry, did the Houston Astros allow Correa to leave? Did the Houston Astros allow Springer to leave? Hell, did the Houston Astros allow Verlander to leave before trading for him back? And yet they've still won. They've developed the next. They got Alvarez. They got Tucker. That's how you win. They don't go out and buy every free agent, and they've owned this last 10 years. There are ways to keep the payroll under where they want to keep it, still sign stars, and still win. It just might not be next year or even the year after. As long as Stanton's on the books, it is more difficult. There's no doubt. But you are looking at young talent. They're going to have to keep developing young talent. And they're not going to replace Rizzo with a world-class first baseman. They're not if you want to keep Juan Soto. That is true. They're not going to go out and search and get the biggest free agent to replace Rizzo. They're not going to get the biggest free agent to play third base. They're going to limit the stars, but the big, big stars can still be here. They're not going to have an all-star high-priced free agent at every position, but you know what? They might. I mean, how do we feel about Volpe? Right now, everyone's pretty gung-ho and excited to see Jason Dominguez return. Verdugo, at the moment, isn't making a ton of money. It made a huge impact on the team. You can still win by making smart decisions, developing your farm system, and signing the few generational stars, which the Yankees will always do. And their payroll might not be this much over the threshold, but it will continue to be at the top of the league. So, shouldn't have said it. Ultimately, the idea that it's not feasible is terminology I'm uncomfortable with, and I think it's stupid to say, and probably inaccurate, because not feasible means you don't want to do it. Don't say it's not feasible. Say we don't plan on doing it. It is feasible. You don't want to do it. And here's the other thing. It doesn't guarantee winning. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. Come back. Reset at the top with the New York Rangers. After losing game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, they now have before them a must-win game on Friday. How do they turn the offense around? How do they get more scoring chances? And Igor needs to be better. He wasn't the main issue. He's not the culprit. I'm not killing him today. But he is the main man responsible for the two goals that did kill and do in the Rangers in game one. He needs to be better. This offense needs to be better. How do they go about it as they have a must-win game Friday night at Madison Square Garden? And you need to be better. Let's hear that crowd a little bit louder than they were. I know the Rangers didn't give you much. I know they were turning the puck over. I know they were losing faceoffs. I know they were getting beat. I still expect more from you, so let's go.